Welcome back, folks. This is Truth vs. News, and I'm Donald Grind, your producer here at JD.Consultants at ProtonMail.com on August the 6th, 2023. We are right in the middle of a hot discussion today. Putin and 5G and all kinds of things are happening in the world in America, and it looks like we've got answers that nobody else has. So let's share some more, Jim.
Scott, you're going to have a special addition today to the show.
Yeah,
we just did a press TV debate on Ukraine, the Ukraine war, the situation that's unfolding. So I had to put on my jacket for the TV debate. So I thought I'd just keep it on for today. And we'll send the debate to Don so he can play it in the bonus round for people to watch. It all describes the Ukrainian war unfolding and what the ultimate resolution may be.
Excellent. Excellent, Scott. Terrific addition. Meanwhile, DeSantis PAC lights stripper's butt cheeks on fire as a metaphor for how they're doing. The people managing the DeSantis campaign want you to know he's like Trump policy-wise, but completely scandal-free as a person. The chaos, childish antics, and hedonism of Trump simply aren't a factor when it comes to the real mega-conservative Ron DeSantis. Their goal is to put the real conservative and adults back in charge. The DeSantis campaign and affiliated PAC never back down. We'll like you to vote in 2024, and by golly, they're willing to light strippers' butt cheeks on fire to prove it. It's almost getting painful to talk about the DeSantis campaign. As Trump said in an interview, DeSantis could have waited, and he would have been odds-on favorite in 28. But he didn't do that. I got him elected. If it weren't for me, he wouldn't be governor. He'd be working in a law office right now or doing whatever he was going to do. Trump is calling on DeSantis to drop out right now to help unify the party. That's probably the best advice anyone's willing to give the Florida governor. It might help him save face and restore some of his dignity before it's too late. He might be able even to rebrand himself before 2028. If he jettisons the pack of freaks, weirdos, and neocons who are running his campaign. Looks like it's like we're looking at two different people right now. There's a Ron DeSantis who is, and we say this without reservation or hesitation, one of the best, if not the best, conservative Republican governors any of us has seen in our lifetime. Governor DeSantis has been nothing but amazing for the state of Florida until now. Then there's the Ron DeSantis presidential campaign version, which is just cringe-inducing and embarrassing. There's a reason for this. The DeSantis campaign and the Never Back Down crowd are the same bunch of losers who brought a past Republican presidential campaign such as Jeb, Mitt Pierre Delecto Romney, and Hanoi John McCain. They have the same neocon policy objectives, the same out-of-touch campaign instincts, as they've had in their previous disasters. They've learned nothing from their defeats. They blow through casts like drunken sailors. They've never known anyone personally who owned a Chevy pickup truck, the most popular vehicle in America. They are Republicans in name only, elites who look down their noses at working class Americans. They're no different than Hillary and Chelsea Clinton or Nancy Pelosi in this respect. They take selfies of their lunches to post on the internet. They're nothing like the mega army. Look no further than the DeSantis campaign biggest bundler power couple, Rich and Brooke Walzer, if you doubt it. They're bundling cash from their wealthy friends on behalf of the DeSantis campaign, and they've hosted parties for the DeSantis-affiliated Never Back Down PAC. Rich Walzer seemed to fancy himself as the modern-day Hugh Hefner. He's got the Hefner-style bathrobe. He wears the orgies. In case anyone misses a comparison, his wife, Brooke, who's been photographed many times with both Ron and Casey DeSantis since the campaign started, is a stripper. The Walzers host orgies and sex parties for the rich and famous. They went to the latest DeSantis campaign reset in Utah this past weekend. The DeSantis campaign is running out of cash fast. So he spent 87,000 schmoozing donors from the failed Mitt Romney campaign. A few days before that, Walzers were following Ron and Casey around in Iowa as they courted evangelical voters. The Walzers even had a video of their Christmas party they threw back in December. attended by members of the Never Back Down and DeSantis campaign. Keep in mind, the party happened 5 months before Ron DeSantis even launched his campaign. Even though DeSantis was not at the party where strippers had their butt cheeks lit on fire to the delight of the drunken revelers, these are the people running his campaign and fundraising for him. They're his biggest donors and apparently close friends. Laura Loomer has a video of this raunchy Christmas party posted on Twitter right now, so if you're so inclined, you can watch it here. The only reason we're linking it is because people won't believe us unless they see it for themselves. Scott, sound okay, like a disaster.
Well, it is, because it's a gross miscalculation of what political testosterone is and how it works on the American voter. And Donald Trump has enormous political testosterone. It's why some of the beta males hate him, and the tragically dysfunctional females who have beta males for husbands, they don't like him, because they see in Donald Trump the real man, the manly, you know, side, and they don't have that. So they gnash on their teeth with him because they've got their vasectomized husbands, and they're a shadow to Donald Trump. And that's a way to look at Ron DeSantis. He's got a political vasectomy. He's harmless. He's innocent. I don't have any scandals. He's like Pinocchio. He's like Mickey Mouse with that high convoluted voice. That's not a man. That's not a warrior. That's not a killer. That's not someone who'll throw the hammer through the deep state windows. That's not someone that'll say, I'm going to come after them. You come after me, I'm coming after you. That's manliness. That's warrior ethos. That's power. That's what inspires people to take to the field in battle. DeSantis doesn't have anything like that. No one has anything like that. Not, you know, Vishaswamy, the Indian guy, he doesn't even have that. No one has that but Donald Trump. And he has more of it now than he ever did before, because he's been attacked. He went into Washington with the hope that we can all get along. We can get the country back on Ronald Reagan's original course. We can heal our wounds and make friends with Russia. Wouldn't it be a great thing? And he was thinking through the minds of the American people. And the American people said, yes, it would. You're thinking our thoughts. But the deep state, the you know, Chris Christie's and the John Brennan's and the Boltons and the Nikki Haley's and the Mike Pompeo's and the Jeff Sessions and the Barrs and the Paul Ryans and the Newt Gingrich's and the Mitt Romney's of the vasectomy castrated Republican establishment, they hated Donald Trump because he had an intimacy and a rallying with the American public that they don't have the testosterone to do. Mitch McConnell, he's a cold dead fish who's just like a zombie at this point. Mitt Romney, a traitor. Ron DeSantis is going towards the Niagara Falls of his political end. And if he's stupid, he's going to continue. If he's smart, he will, like I said, do a pivot point and begin to disconnect himself from the hostility against Donald Trump. And that will at least give him the breathing space and cool the temperature. And in 6 months, the cooler temperatures could be used if he starts to back and support and not necessarily Trump, but back and support any ideas and policies that are destabilizing to the Democrat deep state. Then he'd be in a better position to be at least, you know, appointed something or put into the vice presidency, who knows what. But this hostility of Trump against Trump is only going to work against everybody that shows it. Because again, people like a strong, masculine outsider who has been bloodied. It's like Rocky Balboa, right? The Rocky III, where Rocky got beat up by Clubber Lang, and he found, you know, he had to go through his training, he had to get his moxie, he had to rediscover his roots, he had to reorient himself, and then he gets back in the ring with that eye of the tiger. That's Donald Trump. He's coming back after the effeminate, gay, phagotosis-ridden Clubber Lang Obama and his big Mike, Michael LaVon Robinson. Trump's coming back with a vengeance, with an eye of the tiger, Rocky flair. And no one else has that. Now, if he mixes that with a little bit of vulnerability, a little bit of Reagan nostalgia, and gets rid of his kids that are like tin cans clanking behind his car, and really focuses on being a channeling Reagan, but in a modern sort of warrior way, I think he's unbeatable and unstoppable. And that's what the Democrats think too. That's why they're so terrified of him. And that's why they're doing everything they can to legally dogpile on him. But again, like Samson slaying 1,000 Philistines, I think Trump is being anointed to slay 1,000 Democrats every time he gives a speech. And they go stark raving mad when he does, because they know the American people have tears running down their cheeks, flames coming out of their heart, and clenched fists ready to go to battle, not just for Donald Trump, but for the America and the promise and the hope and the eradication of fear that these Democrats are so pathologically trying to vaccinate Americans with. Jim?
Very nice comparison of Trump with Samson. Love it. Meanwhile, Tafari Campbell's drowning death is deemed an accident, but the Massachusetts police are still withholding basic information about his personal, Barack Obama's personal chef, under the guise of an ongoing investigation. It's been 11 days since Tafari Campbell drowned in a pond, so we're told, bordering the former president's state, but authorities are rejecting requests for even basic facts, including the identity of the sole witness and of the 911 caller. The state is citing a public records law exemption that allows police to withhold any information that could jeopardize an active investigation. Here's CBK News. Massachusetts State Police lose Tafari Campbell's blood sample. According to an unconfirmed source, it was accidentally discarded by a lab intern. The intern unfortunately put it in the wrong location. It was placed in with batches to be destroyed. Gee, I wonder how that happened. Louise Simpson, no motive, no blood sample, no viable witnesses, no water in his lungs. Looks like a professional cleanup. Tafari didn't kill himself. Clark Barrett, drowning victims generally do not have water in their lungs upon routine autopsy. That's mostly a myth, but I'll add, are very clear indications if someone dies by drowning. They're unmistakable. My understanding is Brock brought in his own coroner for the autopsy. Think about it. Huh. Here's a guy who should be the suspect. How often does a suspect in a death allowed to bring in his own medical examiner? Here's Patriot Linus. Oh, how convenient is that? Surprise not. Mario Reyes. Oh, my God. These people get away with everything. Trump would have been indicted for this. Jasm, chain of custody, be damned. Common sense lady, major cover-up, Ken W. The art of erasing a murder is the one thing the D.C. elite are masters of. Furby 40, imagine that. Not a surprise in any way. Cover-up. GIA, been away. They probably lost the body as well. Get this. Meanwhile, Michelle tries to act as though everything's normal. Happy birthday to my favorite thoughtful guy. Love you always. He's looking pretty sober. And, of course, he turned out to have cuts on his hand, a black eye. It's pretty obvious, I think, what actually happened here. Get this. The Babylon Bee is right on target. Job listing for Obama's new personal chef received zero applications. Martha's Vineyard. After posting a job listing to fill their vacant personal chef position, former President Barack Obama and his wife Michelle were disappointed to learn it had received zero applications. Why wouldn't anyone want this job? And exasperated, Michelle was heard asking her servants, personal assistants, driver at the Obama's lavish estate. Working for us is one of the greatest privileges anyone could experience. As long as you don't stick your nose where it doesn't belong, you'll be well compensated, and you'll get to stay alive. Where's the downside? In the absence of someone to prepare meals, Rock has reportedly found himself in the unenviable position of cooking for Michelle every day. You think I want to be the one in the line of fire? He was heard asking one of his bodyguard social media managers. That woman is serious about her food. You do not not want to overcook her state. You saw what happened to the last guy. Remaining staff members have been attempting to steer clear of the couple when they're around, going as far as to avert their eyes or dive into nearby shrubs to avoid running afoul of the former president and his wife. You don't know what it's like around here, said one staff member who has to remain anonymous out of here. I tell you about, I don't want to get, you know, paddleboarded. At publishing time, the Obamas were preparing to sweeten the position of potential chefs, including offering to pay for their funeral and burial arrangements. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, Roger Stone has also said he's been investigating this, and he has talked on Alex Jones about 100 yards or 100 feet off of the shore. It's only 3 feet deep, not 8 feet deep. So there's some discrepancies. He's done some research into that. So if it's that shallow, of course he didn't drown, because you can stand up in it. It is the Chappaquiddick of Barack Obama. It is possibly something that he has participated in directly, if not indirectly. And it is a conspiracy where the police have logged the missing information on the call. Now you're getting into missing blood samples. Now you're getting into missing all these missing details in the reports. This also should be a federal investigation, and the Congress should have a hearing on it and say, where were the Secret Service at the time? Where's the documents? Where's the map? Where's the phone records of every agent that was assigned to the Obama detail during the 24 hours before and after this event? And every phone call going in and coming out from the residents, from the agents, from the Obamas themselves, because something doesn't smell right. And I think, too, the other reason they may try and push Michelle Obama against Trump as a vice president position, I believe, or, you know, I don't think she's going to be the presidential nomination, but her birth certificate, or I should say its birth certificate. Michael Yvonne Robinson was her previous identity. Michael Yvonne Robinson has a birth certificate, no doubt, stating that. Michelle Obama will not have a birth certificate stating that. And if she tried to produce it, it would have, no doubt, all sorts of typos and mischaracterizations of the fonts and the ink color, just like Obama's did, because Michelle Obama, Michael Yvonne Robinson, would have been born in approximately the 1960s. Early 1960s, and birth certificates at that point would have had a certain caricature, a certain state, you know, with their parents and all that, and that is all going to be absent. So it opens up another birth certificate challenge, which Trump has done in the past. So they have to be prepared for that contingency too. They need to have a multiple plan operation. So, you know, these things need to be swift boated too. You need to have swift boat ads that come out and say, Michelle Obama is a man, and we can prove it. It's not a woman. It's a man. Here's video. Here's testimony.
Yeah.
The chef was murdered. Here we can prove it. And get these swift boat ads, because that, as it defeated John Kerry, can help to defeat this lascivious vampire homosexual couple of madness, Jim.
I think this is putting the Democrat Party into complete chaos and a state of panic. Meanwhile, Pfizer and Moderna rep put on the hot seat in a fiery Senate hearing in Australia. Spark flew during a contentious public hearing in the Australian Parliament earlier this week, as reps from Pfizer and Moderna gave unsatisfactory answers to multiple lawmakers' questions. The Australian Senate's Education and Employment Legislation Committee held a hearing Wednesday regarding the status of the COVID-19 vax, including witnesses from Pfizer, Australia, Moderna, and the Australia Therapeutic Goods Administration. Here are the representatives. Here's an announcement. Conservative lawmakers were outraged. At least half of all Australians got COVID after the country imposed some of the most draconian lockdowns and vaccine mandates in the world. During the hearing, a Pfizer rep insisted no one was forced to get the risky COVID jabs in Australia, despite the country's strict mandates. Senator Pauline Hanson confronted Dr. Brian Hewitt, Pfizer Australia's head of regulatory sciences, about a comment he had made earlier in the hearing regarding the country's vaccine mandates. You actually made a comment that one was forced to have the vax, Hansen said, after initially attributing the comment to his colleague, Dr. Christian Thur, Pfizer's Australia County Medical Director. You were in Australia during COVID-19. You must have been fully aware that people, nurses, doctors, people to keep their jobs, were forced to have the vax. Now, do you retract your statement that they were not forced? No, Senator, I believe firmly. No one was forced to have a vaccine, you responded. Mandates and vaccine requirements are determined by governments and health authorities. I believe everyone was offered an opportunity to get a vaccine or not get a vaccine, and I don't believe that anybody was forced to take the vaccine. A lot of Australians will disagree with you on that one, Hansen shot back. Senator Alex Anik had cited statistics showing cases of myocarditis spike precipitously in South Australia following the introduction of the COVID injections. Now we know that myocarditis and pericarditis are two heart inflammation conditions well associated with the COVID mRNA injections. Even the Therapeutic Goods Administration admits that. Yeah, despite this well-established fact, the injections were mandated to thousands of Australians. And speaking about these incursions on freedom, got one labeled an anti-vaxxer or a peddler of dangerous disinformation. Anik cited data he obtained through a Freedom of Information request from the South Australia Health Department that tracked cardiac-related presentations in 15-year-olds to 44-year-olds going back to 2018. The center showed a chart indicating the numbers remained steady at 1,100 a month from January 2018 to July of 2021, when they drastically spiked. By November of 2021, the number of cases peaked at 2,172 per month, almost double the norm. The rise in cases took place just as these injections were rolled out. Panic noted there was another spike in cardiac-related presentations in February of 2023, just when the boosters were being mandated. These injections are harming and, in many cases, killing our young people. So what does SA Health have to say about this? Nothing. They continue to roll out the injection. They continue to push the injection narrative. This injection campaign is going to go down as the greatest scandal in medical history, and none of you said a single thing. Here's Our Voice Matter tweeting. Or the heroes of Australian politics. Australian Senator Anik presented concerning statistics revealing heart-related incidents doubled within the time frame when individuals received two shots of the booster of the making news. Have a listen to Pfizer's answer to Pauline Hanson's question about whether any Australian were forced to choose between the jab and their job. Another, Dr. Malone predicted their response 2 years ago. During the hearing, one of the Pfizer reps admitted that during the rollout, Pfizer employees received a different shot than the general public. Your vaccine mandate was using your own batch of vaccines, especially imported for Pfizer, and not tested by the TGA? Conservative Senator Malcolm Roberts asked Dr. Hewitt. Pfizer undertook to import Pfizer vaccines specifically for employee vaccination program. And that was so that no vaccine would be taken from government stocks that were being delivered to clinics as needed, Dr. Hewitt replied in answer to a senator's question. What we've seen during the COVID mismanagement and malfeasance was the largest transfer of wealth in our nation's history from we the people to big pharma via big government and lied repeatedly during the COVID mismanagement, Roberts said. Pellet tweet bombshell. Pfizer employees were given a special batch, different from what was forced into the general pop. I'll bet it was a saline solution. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, I think this is the tip of the iceberg that is going to be emerging. The revelation, the discovery of terrible crimes against humanity done out of ignorance is going to be the claim. But I think the Nazi German doctors tried to claim the same thing, and they were all hung at Nuremberg. And I think this is going to carry the same ironic consequences. And we said that from the very beginning. This is a violation of the Nuremberg Code, the Nuremberg hearings that codified into international law that you cannot subjugate people to medical experimentation without their consent, without all sorts of other things. This was a vaccine without consent. This is a vaccine extortion operation. This was a coercion and a threat and hostility we've never seen before in any Western country. It has been so despicable and infuriating to witness the America that you fought for, Jim, that I fought for, that our last 100 years we fought for to preserve the rights and liberties and independence of Americans and their body as the sacred temple that it is. This was thrown overboard in the hysteria, the fear of COVID-19, which was developed in Ukraine by the U.S. biochemical labs, which Victoria Nuland tried to say didn't exist, but then changed her tune. The biochemical labs in Ukraine, which has emerged a mountain of documentation that established this, that the French and French and the British and the Americans tried to stop from coming to the United Nations. Why? Because it would turn the whole world against the United States, Britain, Australia, and any country that had anything to do with this. So this coming out of Australia, it's going to be coming out of Canada, all Western societies, in the discovery of the fraud and the manipulation. It's the only real pet peeve I have for Donald Trump. When I was back there in November 2020, we wrote an executive order for him to sign saying no American shall ever be forced to get the shot. It's in violation of the Nuremberg Code. It's in violation of the Declaration of Human Rights. And it's violation of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. And the failure to sign that executive order protecting every American, guaranteeing that they could not be prejudiced or discriminated against or fired or excluded or any of that. The failure of Trump to sign that executive order opened up a Pandora's box of suffering and death we've never seen before. And it was the greatest failure of his presidency. And I hope and pray that he's smart enough to realize that and back out of it and politically and be astute in how he prepares it, because that's a big thing that's hanging over his head like the sword of Damocles. So many Americans are wary because of that issue alone. And I think as time goes by and more people drop like flies and children die of heart attacks, like LeBron James's son, 18 years of age, and he's at USC playing basketball and he has a heart attack. Never before has any young person suffered what they're suffering today because of this COVID-19 vaccine that is really the bio jab engineering, all sorts of bad stuff. So I think it's only going to gain momentum like a snowball going down the cliff. And people need to get more and more aggressive on this because they're going to try and pick up another pandemic, probably going to try and do it in October, November, December to set it in motion for 2024. And it's going to afflict everybody who's been vaccinated. Everybody who's going to be vaccinated, has been vaccinated, this Crimean Congo fever or aberration of it, are going to start dropping dead because their immune systems are depleted. Cold and flu season is right around the corner, and you're going to have a lot of people dying, and they're going to say, oh, it's another vaccine. It's another pandemic. We need to go into lockdowns. We need to follow China's model and blah, blah, blah. Now that's when Americans need to rise up and say, never again. It was all a lie, and you're not going to fool us a second time, Jim.
Very nice, very nice. And I agree, he ought to have signed that executive order, Scott.
Right.
Meanwhile, despite 12 deaths during clinical trials, CDC signs off on RSV shots for newborns. This is outrageous. The CDC recommended one of the first ever monoclonal antibody marketed as a defense for all newborns against respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. Bayferos, also known as Nursemilab, is produced by pharma giants Sanofi and AstraZeneca. In a press conference, CDC referred to the drug as a powerful tool in a new immunization, according to the agency. ACIP voted to include nirsimivab in the Vaccine for Children program, which provides recommended vaccines and immunization at no cost to about half the nation's children and does them unparalleled damage. CDC is currently working to make nirsimivab available through the Vaccine for Children program. Healthcare providers will be key partners in the CDC outreach efforts. Additional clinical guides and healthcare provider education material will be provided by CDC in the coming months. According to the AP, the drug will be offered as a one-time shot for infants born just before or during the RSV season, and for those less than 8 months old before the season starts, and for some high-risk 8 to 19-month-old infants. Yeah, you can't kill them young enough. Infants in the high-risk group include immunocompromised children and those with chronic lung disease, as well as Native American and Alaska Native children who have RSV hospitalization rates between 4 and 10 times those of the general pop. CDC's ACIB, which has disgracefully recommended every damn vaccine coming down the track, no matter how many people they kill, approved the recommendation in a unanimous 10-0 vote. Though not bound by ACIP vote, CDC Director Mandy Cohen signed off on the recommendation letter on Thursday. Made for us will be broadly available for all infants, regardless of whether they have a health condition. That will be administered as a single dose. Some medical experts criticized the recommendation, pointing to infant deaths that occurred during the clinical trial for Bayforos and questioning the need for their widespread administration to the age group. Cardiologist Dr. Peter McCullough, a magnificent human being, observes, while monoclonal antibodies are reasonably safe and effective, they are not clinically indicated nor medically necessary in all newborns. This new preventive strategy should be considered in rare cases with baseline lung disease, such as severe asthma or cystic fibrosis. Injecting all newborns should be off the table and rejected by parents who want to avoid unnecessary drugs and potential harms to their newborn. Brian Hooker, PhD, BE Senior Director of Science and Research for Children Health Defense, cited a significant number of infant deaths during the clinical trial of this drug in his remarks. This is really too bad and seems to be part of the Department of Health and Human Services scare tactics regarding RSV, which is generally a mild infection. It finds its origin during the development of the polio vaccine. Wow. The efficacy of the antibodies from clinical trials is woefully low, and the circulating half-life of such a therapeutic may be as low as 2 weeks. I'm also worried about allergic reactions of newborns, especially given the high dose of antibodies, and that 12 infants died in the experimental arm of the clinical trial. Children Health Defense tweets, according to a published CDC paper from 2021, 25 babies up to 1 year of age died from RSV yearly in the U.S. 12 innocent babies died during the nirsimivab trial, the so-called powerful tool to protect children against RSV. Unbelievable. Dr. Meryl Nass, an internist, biological warfare epidemiologist, and member of the CHD, Scientific Advisory Committee, cited a CDC study indicating RSV's low risk for babies. She also cited the lack of demonstrated long-term efficacy for such monoclonal antibodies, writing, there is already resistance in the RSV strain to this product, and so as it gets used, the resistance rate will outperform the susceptible ones, and the RSV ecology is likely to change, meaning its use, and what she means by that, its effective use, will likely not last very long. ACIP recommended adding it to the childhood vax schedule, which provides manufacturer a waiver of liability, but also recommending it as a drug for insurance purposes, leaving it out of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. ACIP members and CDC epidemiologist Jefferson Jones, MD, MPH, said during Thursday meeting, the workgroup felt RSV-associated disease in infants born during and entering their first RSV season is of public health importance. Also during the meeting, clinical data regarding the efficacy was presented, indicating it was up to 75% effective at presenting lower respiratory tract infections that required medical attention among infants, 78% effective at presenting hospitalization. I don't believe this for a second. Jones acknowledged, however, that a primary limitation in a clinical trial was that RSV testing may be more common for children with risk conditions, inflating RSV-specific hospitalization rates overall. The evidence rate was very low certainty, downgraded because of indirectness, because of the use of pharmacokinetic data as a surrogate for efficacy. The population did not include children that match a proposed indication outside of chronic lung disease, congenital heart disease. The study was small in size. No placebo group was included for comparison, meaning it was worthless. Several infant deaths, 12 in all, were reported during the clinical trial, which the FDA claimed during a June review were unrelated to the antibody. Thursday, Jones repeated this claim, saying no RSV-associated deaths were recorded, which appears simply to be a blatant, bald-faced lie. CNBC reported in June that of the 12 infants, 4 died from cardiac disease, 2 from gastroenteritis, 2 from unknown causes, but were likely cases of sudden infant death syndrome. 1 died from a tumor, 1 died from COVID, 1 died from a skull fracture, and 1 died of pneumonia. Stat News reported in June no data are available about whether giving nesemavib to a baby whose mother was vaccinated against RSV during pregnancy would give the infant more protection or would be a waste of the product or bring about some form of harm. This is absolutely outrageous. Scott, your thoughts?
You know, it's sad that you can't go to any hospital nowadays and not be walking into a death trap of fear and the potentiality of being stuck with a needle and lied to with what's in that needle and having your children forcibly stuck with the needle and vaccinated with substances that will retard them, will mentally cripple them, and you know, with all sorts of retardation and such. We've seen kids, you know, going into these hospitals normal, getting obscene amounts of vaccines and coming out like zombies, and for the rest of their lives being afflicted with all sorts of Asperger's and other heavy metals and things like that. This is now the death cult of the United States and Western society, and it shouldn't surprise us. We've had so much evil, so much lasciviousness, lust, sin, fornication, worship of death, abortion, the fruits of death, of course, bring death and misery and what we see coming. So there needs to be an alternative. There needs to rise out of this filth and death that we surround ourselves with. There needs to be alternative hospitals, alternative methods of giving children birth. And perhaps you need to go to Russia. Perhaps you need to go somewhere. I was born in Scotland, thank God, because I didn't get any vaccines until much, much, much later in life. And, even that was tepid back in the 1970s. But today, I wouldn't have a child born in an American hospital for any reason, because I would not trust any nurse or any doctor not to put their own financial gain and the bonus that Pfizer and Johnson and Moderna will give them by sticking them with some sort of a shot. And the government, particularly in California, is completely on board with that. So that's another reason people are fleeing America, fleeing California, because we have become a death cult of morons. And I look forward to the day, not with a joy, but with a sense of confirmation. I look forward to the day when you see justice being exacted upon these doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners and hospitals with sledgehammers and weapons and bullets and cars and all sorts of other instruments of death being served upon these murderers who have killed children with vaccines, killed people with vaccines, I think their days are numbered, and you're going to see a vengeance being unleashed when especially men discover that their wives are dead, their children are dead, their parents are dead because of doctors and their politicians that have forced this vaccine on them. Then you've got men that are the equivalent of kamikazes looking for a ship to run into, and they're going to go right after the men with white hospital coats who are really masquerading as agents of death, not life. Jim?
Yeah, nice point, Scott. Very.
Yeah, excellent.
Meanwhile, Joker actor Mark Maron calls right-wing men criticizing Barbie a bunch of effing insecure babies. Joker actor Mark Maron, who also fancies himself a comedian, shared his thoughts on Greta Gerwig's Barbie film, called men criticizing the film for its promotion of woke ideology, a bunch of effing insecure babies. I've seen the film. I didn't see it promoting woke ideology at all. First, Maron lavished praise on the film for its progressive feminist message and said on TikTok, "I saw Barbie, I thought it was an effing masterpiece. And like, I don't throw the word around lightly, but Jesus Christ, right?" He continued, "I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't even that excited about going. It's like it does a fairly amazing thing to create a sort of broad-based entertainment product that applies to the entire spectrum, I think primarily of women, and they'll just see it in progressive politics and basic feminism in a way that's funny, informative, and well-executed in a context that is engaging is effing monumental. It shouldn't be, but it's pretty radical, and it's intentionally, thoroughly explaining feminist ideas in a way that's funny. I've just never seen anything like it, and I guess that's like, you know, the world is having the same experience on all different levels." He then returned to his praise of the film. "The performances were all great, but it's really that script, man. I've had the same experience right from the get-go, like watching a musical. And they cast Will Ferrell to be Will Ferrell funny, which is always a treat." He then lampooned men criticizing the film and the comedy about men is inspired. And the fact that certain men took offense to the point where they try to build a grift around it in terms of their narrative as right-wing expletive is so embarrassing for them. I mean, so embarrassing for them. Any dude who can't make those hits in the movie, they've really got to take a look in their pants and decide what they're made of. I mean, Jesus Christ, what a bunch of effing insecure babies. He then returned to his praise. "The performances were all great, but it's really that script, man. I had this same experience right from the start. That's what I thought of it. It made me proud somehow." Numerous right-wing critics have described the film as woke. Novelist and comic book creator John Delozzo stated in his review, "Barbie opens up with a scene that's actually a little girl playing with a baby doll and in an allegory for abortion and train women to abort their babies to be happy. She destroys a little baby doll and looks up at Margot Robbie, who's this beautiful, wonderful, thin physique, and she wants that out of her life, that she's become a career woman who doesn't care about such things. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, according to these people. So it's a pro-baby-killing movie immediately out the gate." I think, by the way, that comment is just ridiculous. He concluded his review, stated, "Man-eating film, pro-trans film, pro-homosexual film, pro-abortion film, and this is exactly what we've gotten out of this kid's property, which should have been just a fun movie." YouTuber Shadversity on the alternate channel Nice Watch described the film as one of the most blatant man-hitting activism-charged, arranged, subversive, intersectional pieces of insane, hyper-indulgent, third-wave feminist propaganda I've ever seen. He later said, "Now I know, having watched it, whoever said this wasn't a feminist film is lying through their teeth. This is an insanity, because there are different levels of feminism. No, no, this is third-word, intersectional, subversive, man-hating, hating, power-hungry, destructive feminism type of that. And it goes off the cliff. It jumps the shark and all. I just want to add, I saw that film. I didn't get any kind of reaction like that whatsoever. It's talking about Barbie living in a fantasy world and going out into the real world and adjusting her thoughts. It's about becoming comfortable with who you are as a girl or a woman. And while it is, I think, primarily addressed to women, men have a lot to gain from it. I went to watch this with my daughter, and I told her immediately following the film that I was prepared to be entertained. My granddaughter, when my wife asked her how she found the film, said, "I loved it. It was fun." But it was much more than that. I think the film is actually profound, and that those who are attacking it either haven't watched it at all or profoundly misunderstood the message. Those are my thoughts, Scott.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, and maybe I should go and sneak in to see it and see another film while it. But you look, Barbie, from my days of being a little boy up, Barbie always represented the best ideal of womanhood. The beautiful blonde hair, the happy smile, the beautiful complexion, the big eyes, the slender physique. I mean, she was the perfect woman. She was what every little boy wanted to marry. And I mean, she was delicate. She was feminine. She was happy and optimistic and buoyant. And I think that translates into some of the advertisements I've seen from the film, where Margot Robbie is gleefully and teethfully smiling and giggly and waving, and there's a buoyancy. Men love that. And little kids love that too. They may not see the abortion things or the other stuff they've mentioned, or the career woman, or we don't need men and all that. That's all kind of silly, flippant, and ignorant philosophical, political rhetoric they've written into the script. But as conservatives, it's all nonsense. It's lies. And it's a grotesque misunderstanding of what women and their beings and their souls and their bodies want and are designed for, and what brings them fulfillment and happiness. And what brings a woman ultimate fulfillment and happiness is lifelong marriage with a man who's committed to adoring her as his wife, providing for her, and being the leader, being a teacher, being an instructor, being the strong man and humble man, and a man that prays with his wife and protects and covers her, and that cherishing, that's old fashioned, but it's also eternal. It's part of the God design into men and women. And we have become so, and I've read many, many books on this. My dissertation was on all the social sciences relating to things like this. I know this inside and out. And we have morphed and deformed our society by making laws that morph and deform the culture into this monstrosity where, you know, women are led to believe that multiple sex partners need to lead to ultimate fulfillment. No, it doesn't. It leads to madness, loneliness, and sexually transmitted diseases and all sorts of other problems. And women after the age of 30, 35, suddenly they're off the cliff. And if they're not married with a husband or a child, their chances diminish with each year. And that's why you see the misery of feminism, going stark, raving, hysterical, mad. So the reality of womanhood and relationships and marriage and children and family is a biological, natural design that we've had in us, that many on the Jewish, Zionist, Israeli side, of the Talmudic side, on the homosexual side, the demonic side, they've tried to corrupt and pervert that. And that's what you call modern liberal Democrats, most miserable, disgusting people you ever saw. And then the conservative, women and men on the other side. I think you see that in Turning Point. A lot of their young women who go to these conferences are fairly conservative. Some of them are a little bit polluted with pop culture. But the Barbie film, to me, although I haven't seen it yet, on first blush, has a childlike innocence that attracts children and people, adults, who like to kind of momentarily saturate in that dreamlike state. And you have to be able to discern the fly shit from the pepper. and say, yeah, that's there's a little political nuance. There's a little leftism. That's a little feminist bullshit. That's all stupidity and lies. But you can get good things out of it. And for me, when I see the Margot Robbie, who I think is drop dead gorgeous, if she opens her mouth and sounds like an angry feminist, of course, she'll instantly turn into the Rachel from The Exorcist with a froggy voice and cracked blue skin. That's the real ugliness of feminism. But Margot Robbie is the role of Barbie, represents the ideal woman that is not just physically attractive, but I think the bubbly innocence and the giggliness and the girliness is something that all men love. Not out of a lustful hunger, but out of a primordial design in men to protect, to nourish, to be the providers, to be, you know, as God made them, the covering for the woman. So there's a lot of deeper nuances that, you know, I think it's a good thing for the film to come out. And these silly fools that get up there and start using profanity and their criticism of conservatives, they have their reward, and we know where they're going. Jim?
Well, I saw the film as pro-woman, pro-girl, but I didn't see it as anti-man or anti-boy, and I did not see it as promoting abortion. It really was about being comfortable with your own gender, your own sexuality. I didn't even see a promotion of transgenderism there at all. And I was looking for it. I mean, I was prepared to be both entertained, but I was going to be sensitive to political nuances. I enjoyed the film. I recommend everyone should watch it. Yeah. It's a valuable experience and even informative. Meanwhile, get this. Before the Parkland school shooting gets reenacted with live gunfire, lawmakers are taken to the site where 17 people were massacred, or so we were told. Nobody died at Parkland. Mark my words. At least 140 live rounds will be fired inside of Marjorie Stoneman in a reenactment of the 2018 mass shooting, part of a lawsuit against a former sheriff deputy who stayed outside during the massacre. The bullets will be fired into a ballistic trap inside the school's three-story building, where violence unfolded in Parkland, Florida. The reenactment, which will take several hours, will mimic the killer's movements on the day that left 17 people dead and 17 others injured in what remains the deadliest U.S. high school shooting. Scott Peterson, former Broward County Sheriff's deputy, was found not guilty in June of criminal charges after prosecutors accused him of ignoring his training and failing to confront the shooter instead of taking cover outside the building as the victims were gunned down. Peterson argued he didn't enter the building because he couldn't tell where the gunshots were coming from due to echoes on the campus. A civil action against Peterson brought by several of the victim families and a survivor. They want to reenact the shooting in an effort to prove the former deputy heard upward of 70 shots and knew where they were coming from. David Brill, an attorney for the plaintiff, said in court in July. Judge Carol Lisa Phillips indicated she would allow the reenactment. In addition to using the same model of semi-automatic rifle and caliber cartridge, Brill told the judge the reenactment would sound the fire alarm during the same time as the day of the shooting. He said he expected it would take roughly 2 hours. The school will be closed for the day and no students on campus during the reenactment. A bipartisan congressional delegation will tour the site of the massacre ahead of the shooting reenactment, said Florida Representative Jared Muskowitz, a graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He sent a letter of all members to attend. It's important for folks in Congress, my colleagues, to see what happens when a school shooting comes to your neighborhood. It's going to be a very emotional day. Several victim families will join the 9 congressional lawmakers for the tour, which for many will be the second time they visit the untouched site. Last month, family and surviving victims were allowed to visit for the first time since a tragedy on February 14, 2018. Yes, Valentine's Day. Because it was Valentine's Day, they let the students go home at 1 p.m. Only a handful stayed behind to participate as crisis actor victims. Max Schlachter, whose 14-year-old son Alex was killed in his English class on the first floor of the 1200 building, or so we are told, attended a private tour and saw where his child took his last breath. I've wanted to bring members of Congress to this building for years. After I walked through it myself and saw the horror, I saw Alex's blood all over the floor, all over his desk, and all the other victims. I walked out of that building and I was just so angry. It's worse than I ever imagined. The grieving father decided to channel his agony into action. I'm like, I know what I need to do. I need to bring as many members of Congress as possible. I want them to see what happens when you don't prioritize the safety and security of our kids above education. Because what happens is you get dead kids, and we can't let that happen. And of course, that's true for real shootings, but this was a fake. Schlachter said he hoped the tour and reenactment will result in good common sense school safety legislation by taking guns away from the American people. Muskowitz, local congressman, said the mass tragedy had led to some change, but more needs to be done. We've asked the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School Safety Act 3 weeks after the shooting in a bipartisan effort in the Florida legislature, raising the minimum age to buy a gun from 18 to 21, appropriating millions of dollars for mental health assistance in schools. It was a comprehensive piece of legislation. I don't know that D.C. is going to do that. Let me just share you. Of course, it was supposed to be an AR-15, which fires a .223 Remington round at high velocity. If you're actually hit, it does terrible damage to your legs. Look at these breaks. There's been an article in the New York Times about it. Trauma surgeons tell you what it's really like to try to repair such devastating injuries. Bones are exploded, soft tissue absolutely destroyed, one said. Perhaps no one knows the devastating wounds inflicted by assault-style rifles better than the trauma surgeon who struggled to repair them. The doctors say they are haunted by their experiences confronting injuries so dire, they still struggle to find words to describe them. Well, not at Marjorie Stoneman. Look at this. Here you have Maddie Wilford, who's running around just days later from having been shot in the chest and abdomen. Listen to this. Dr. Nick Aprantko said wounds on Miss Wilford's chest and abdomen had already healed. Young people have a tendency to heal very fast. A bullet wound on her upper arm, which had injured two tendons, would take more time. She's very, very lucky. We're talking about large caliber bullets, false, penetrating through the chest and abdomen. Those are serious injuries. Indeed, they're fatal. This is such bullshit. This is a crisis actor doctor. He's a total fraud. He doesn't even understand .223 is only slightly larger than a .22 caliber. It's not large caliber. He's discredited himself. He said he believed Miss Wilford would be able to return to school next week, probably make a full recovery. I'm so grateful to be here, Miss Wilford said. It wouldn't be possible without those officers and first responders and these amazing doctors, especially all the love everyone has sent. Here's another. This is Samantha Fuentes, released from the hospital walking and being interviewed by reporters after only 1 week. And her two legs now require only Band-Aids for the AR-15 wounds. And she apparently had to wait 30 minutes in her classroom before SWAT officers arrived. Lucky for her, she didn't bleed out and die. She's all over the news with her statement regarding Trump's phone call. Just Google her name. For New York Times anti-Trump, Samantha Fuentes today. See, they actually use simunition. It's fake ammunition made out of laundry detergent and beeswax. It'll set up a wart, a lump on your skin, but it will not actually penetrate your skin. Get this. According to the official timeline, 2 minutes and 33 seconds after he'd been dropped off by Uber, Nicholas Cruz walked to begin shooting, where he was seen by teacher Stacy Lipple as dressed in full metal garb, helmet, face mask, bulletproof armor. Well, if he's in that garb, how could she know it was Nicholas Cruz? Obviously, she could have no idea who it was. So we are to believe in the space of 2 minutes and 33 seconds, Nicholas Cruz managed to walk from the curb where the Uber driver dropped him off to the east stairwell, put on a full metal garb of helmet, face mask, bulletproof armor, and begin shooting? If you believe that, you must also believe in the Easter Bunny. Get this. From an actual classroom at Parkland.
Oh. Are you an elite? Are your staged attacks not going as planned? Are your globalist agendas failing because you're using subpar crisis actors? Well, then look no further. Hi, I'm Harrison Hanks, the ultimate crisis actor. Need a medical doctor? In 18 years as a medical examiner, I've never seen anything like it. Yeah.
Is this one over the top? Is this one different?
Yeah, it's over the top. 33 children died. Do you need a grieving husband? Did a right-winger set off a bomb? Right, yeah, we're just milling about over there. Had a massive explosion. And I'm your man. Tired of melodramatic acting?
There's light away from the darkness.
I'm just trying to figure out if he's okay.
I lost my 20-year-old, but I had 20 years with my son.
It's just tragedy, horror, and tragedy.
Or maybe you need me to tone down my good acting to match your sorry lot of wannabes. In that case, I can go from this.
My name is Bobby Palmer. My family's one of the families that lost a child.
To this.
My name is Bobby Palmer. And my family's one of the families that lost a child.
Going for the guns takes subtlety, like this.
I don't know how many more need to die before the president does something.
Not this.
And please, could we do something with the assault weapons?
And every one of those hands is a reason why those weapons should not be out in the general public.
Because in this kind of a situation, what has changed? Have we learned nothing?
Tired of green screen mishaps and disappearing noses? Me too.
Okay.
Is there anything else you want to say?
I'm green screen ready, bonded, and insured. I can morph into 1,000 different faces. I offer reasonable rates, and I have no conscience. Just pick your card to play on the world stage.
From homeless to police officer, from doctor to witness, to your ace card, the grieving father.
You can count on Harrison Hanks to push through your agenda. Regain their trust. Call Harrison Hanks for all your crisis needs. Thank you. And good luck.
Yeah. Good luck. How about that?
Say now what you didn't see here, you can find elsewhere on my How to Spot a False Flag Part 1, Part 2. Go to my BitChute channel or just do a search on it. You should be able to find it. Well, you see, students doing their best to cry, but they're worried about their bottled water. One's on his iPad. A kid is pulling his pots. The camera swings around. You see what looks like a body, but it's a training dummy with no head, no arms, and a pool of fake blood. You see individuals in police uniforms rushing in and out, and you think, man, those Parkland cops were really Johnny on the spot. But it turns out Parkland gave up its police force about 5 years before. Those were actors dressed in police uniforms. It's outrageous. This was a total fraud. Scott, your thoughts?
Total fraud indeed. And we've seen this played out over various episodes. We've seen this played out in the Christchurch shooting of New Zealand, which we debunked and showed was impossible. And they took down our YouTube channels as a result of that. They also used that shooting to de-weaponize New Zealand and prepare it to be completely enslaved a couple years later with their COVID-19 lockdowns and such. This, the shooting in Florida is the same model. The sim ammunition, you're right, Jim. I used that when I was in the Army. It is just training ammunition. There's nothing forensically accurate about the wounds that a 5.56 or a 2.23 would cause, similar to these people walking around with Band-Aids. It's completely laughable and fraudulent. There's so many elements of this, but again, it shows you their design is to try and create this emotional guilt for the simpletons, the simple-minded, and try and use this to usher in gun control. The answer is very, very simple. And Ron DeSantis, if he was smart, he would say, all right, I'm going to allow every teacher that wants to carry a firearm concealed to have it on their person in their classroom in a secure spot to be a security guard for their kids, and make a special application. Maybe, you know, you make it so everyone is known. If you're going to be a teacher to carry a gun, you want the right people. You don't want false flag actors coming in and pretending that they're teachers to shoot people up. But that's how you stop real legitimate shootings. But they don't happen. It's all fraudulent. And I would say this too, Jim. It's a very simple thing. If you go and say, okay, if you say these shootings occurred, they're occurring by leftist, schizophrenic, Democrat, over-medicated zombies. It's not coming from Republican, Christian, conservative, traditional values kids or people. It's coming from the schizophrenics. And when they played that transgender that allegedly shot up the Presbyterian school or whatever a few months ago, you know, that's just a confirmation of the schizophrenia of the left create these mindless people, not conservatives. But again, the shooting and all of this fraud is just the new deception of America. I was disappointed to see RT had a documentary following this David Hogg and the rest of these halfwits around, you know, doing this political mission against gun control and stuff. I thought, wow, your RT is either intentionally or ignorantly giving a platform to just nothing but a psyop on the American people. So we have to be awakened and alert and sensitive in these areas, because they're only going to, I think, increase as the Democrats become increasingly aware that their political lives are about to be extinguished in 2024. Jim?
Very nice, Scott. Excellent commentary throughout this show. Don, take us out.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Excellent show. We covered the full spectrum today here on August 6th, here on Truth Versus News Incorporated, with Donald Ron, your host, and first Jim and Scott. And anyway, you want to share this show, especially that first hour, and I think it's well worth everybody's viewing. So thanks for watching and sharing, and away we go. Love you all. See you next week, we hope.